Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? Man, I got a really, really jam-packed show for you today. Now, everybody's got to remember, I got stuff I got to do, like I'm going to a bachelor party over the weekend, so there's no show tomorrow because travels begin tomorrow, so no show tomorrow, also no show Monday as a result of the same thing, although I think Monday is Memorial Day as well. So it's not like there would have been a show anyway on Monday. But that means a lot of time where you're not going to see me. But it's okay because I planned in advance because I'm cool like that. So while I'm gone, there's going to be a bunch of stuff that gets uploaded to the YouTube channel. You'll just miss my lovely voice on this low-quality sounding live radio show, which means you won't really miss it all that much. So like I said, a lot of stuff in today's show, though. There's a lot of exciting things happening, I guess you can say, in regards to the election and in regards to the hot takes from a bunch of clowns about the election. God, I've been beating up on Nate Silver like nobody's business. But I don't want to do it, but I have to do it. He's been fucking wrong. He's been wrong. So what do you want me to do? And I've been right along the way. So I know it makes me sound like a pompous prick, but the proof is in the pudding, man. You guys know when I predicted Trump would win. You guys know that he was on the it's not going to happen train. And now you have more articles coming from his website that are just preposterous. I mean, the headlines don't even match up with the content of the article. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself. I got to stop. Let me rewind a little bit here. So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about, oh, God, Huffington Post. There's an opinion piece on Huffington Post about why white males are not supporting Hillary Clinton in large enough numbers. Spoiler alert, we're apparently sexist. Even so, you're thinking, well, is she talking about Trump supporters, Republicans? No. Bernie voters. And if you think you're not sexist, it's just because you don't know that subconsciously you're sexist. Isn't that fascinating? So, like, it's not, you don't need evidence. You just say it, and then when they go, what are you talking, I'm going to tell you the reasons why I'm against her. They go, no, it's just subconscious sexism. So you can give me whatever reasons you want, but it's covering up for the true reason, which is you're sexist. Oh, God. I'm going to lose it today. I might lose it today. And then we got a bit of breaking news here at the top of the show, although I don't know how much of breaking news it really is. But let's go ahead and get started here. So Donald Trump went on Jimmy Kimmel's show last night. And if he would perhaps consider debating Bernie Sanders, since Hillary Clinton backed out of a debate she was supposed to have with Bernie Sanders. And his response was, yes. So Gawker speaks about this here. Apparently, Bernie Sanders sent a tweet out, and Trump said, quote, oh, I'm sorry, this is Bernie's actual tweet. Hillary Clinton backed out of an agreement to debate me in California before the June 7th primary. Are you prepared to debate the major issues facing our largest state and the country prior to the California primary? And then Trump said, yes, I am. How much is he going to pay me? Because if I debated him, and we would have such high ratings, and I think I should take that money and give it to some worthy charity. If he paid a nice sum for charity, I would love to do that. So, obviously, it's Donald Trump, so there's 8,000 things to read into that. The thing is, now he's on record as saying he would do it, but then he's also on record as giving himself the wiggle room and saying, but with charity, you need to pay me in order to do this thing. It's not like you're the presumptive GOP nominee and you're one of two people that's going to have a very good chance of becoming president, and you should just perhaps want to debate the issues. No, maybe you should pay me money so that we can then discuss the issues, and I can give the money to charity. By the way, you know why he's saying that? He's saying that because he's in the middle of a scandal right now about how he raised $6 million for veterans, and that's actually not true at all. So there's allegations that some of the money was skimmed off the top. That number fluctuates. Sometimes it's as low as $3 million. Sometimes it's as high as $6 million. The different veterans groups are like, we didn't get that fucking money. So now he's like, oh, I love charity so much. He's doing the classic Donald Trump move. Go on the offense. So when you're accused of something and you're likely guilty of it, go on the offense. I'm going to raise even more money for charity because I'm tremendous. I'm so tremendous, and charities are tremendous. So Bernie did a great move because when Trump said this, Bernie immediately on Twitter said, game on, we're debating. That's awesome. So we'll see, man. And I know that the Young Turks, of course I'm part of TYT Network, but the Young Turks reached out and did a formal invite not only to Bernie, who of course agrees because now Cenk's actually done some events with Bernie, but also the Trump campaign. They have connections in the Trump campaign also, and they did a formal invitation. And, I mean, I guess they've yet to hear back from the Trump campaign, and obviously they might not pick the Young Turks as the venue because they're not exactly 50% for Trump, 50% for Bernie. But nonetheless, the invitation's out there, and it appears like we're at the beginning stages of getting to an agreement. They'd have to pick a venue, they'd have to pick moderators, they'd have to pick 1,001 things, and they'd have to iron out all the details and whatnot. But we have tentative agreement, but then again, remember, we're dealing with Donald Trump here, and he might just back out. But why would Donald Trump do it? This is another thing that's really important and really interesting. Remember, you could snub Hillary Clinton by doing this. So it's a giant cue to her, because she's weaseled her way out of the debate, and now Trump can swoop in at the last second and say, oh, you turned down all this media and all this attention for free? Well, I'm going to take it. How about that? Now people are going to be looking at me. They're going to be looking at Bernie. And then furthermore, in the mind of Donald Trump, he might want to boost Bernie's profile to try to get Bernie elected in the general, or get the nomination, I should say, so that in the general, he feels like Bernie's more beatable because he's a dunce. And this is something, guys, a lot of people think this. A lot of people just, because they look at everything from the surface perspective. They go, oh, old socialist Jew, you know, he's not a smooth, savvy politician, so it'd be easier to beat this guy. I mean, look at this guy. Come on, Bernie is Bernie. Yeah, he's Bernie. But they think, like, well, you know, I'll walk all over him, except you won't. Look at the polling data. The most recent poll has Bernie beating Trump by 15 points. In the most recent poll for Hillary, loses to Trump by 2 points. That's a gigantic difference. And you can't just sweep that under the rug. To sweep that under the rug would be profoundly irrational. But people do. They go, I don't know, polls this far out don't count except the ones that I want to count, but they don't count for a variety of reasons. So what evidence could there possibly be that would make you say, you know what, maybe Bernie is a better general election candidate? Would he have to be up over Trump by 30 points? And would Hillary have to be down by 10? What are the numbers? Because he's up 15. That's a lot. Hillary's down 2. So if you, my feeling is if you dismiss this, there's literally no evidence that would push you over the top to say perhaps Bernie is a better general election candidate. But I'm telling you, Hillary has super high unfavorable. She's under FBI investigation. She doesn't have the heart of the Democratic base because, of course, she voted for the Iraq War, the Patriot Act. She's so close to Wall Street. All these things hurt, portrayed as the establishment. But Trump may be silly enough to buy into the conventional wisdom where he thinks, yeah, I'd rather run against Bernie because I think he's more beatable. But he's not. Nobody tell him that.
Actually, I just told him that.
But it probably wouldn't get in his thick head anyway. So he has the potential to snub Hillary in multiple ways, and he might take that because he can't resist it. And also, he's Donald Trump. He loves getting out there in front of people. I think he loves campaigning arguably more than any politician in American history. I mean, he fucking loves this shit, man. He'll do 8 different shows in a day. He'll call into shows. He'll visit places. He'll do rallies. He's everywhere. And that's another one of the main reasons why he's been so good at this. What, you think Jeb Bush is a good campaigner? You know, oh, I can't wait to talk to people. No, Trump loves being out there and having people listening. So, man, would it be awesome if there's a Bernie Sanders debate versus Donald Trump, and how badly would Bernie crush him? No, I don't think, like, people don't get it. They don't get it. They just don't understand. Like, Trump is able to get away with being a ridiculous human being because the other people that are usually on stage debating him are ridiculous human beings. And honestly, in a debate with Hillary versus Trump, I think it's actually probably more likely that Trump would win those debates because Hillary, she's too cold and calculating, and she doesn't come across genuine. So you'd get the sense that everything she says is robotic and planned out, where he could just curb stomp her. And, you know, she also doesn't know the right lines of attack, whereas Bernie, all he cares about is policy substance. So when Trump goes off contradicting himself, he's like, look at what you did. You just contradicted yourself. Before you said this, now you said this. That doesn't make sense. Which is it, Donald? Why do you keep changing your mind?
I'm for single-payer health care. Every other modern nation has single-payer health care. It's a disgrace what we have in this country. Are you for keeping it like this? Well, why would you want that? That's a horrible idea.
He could just crush him on policy. And when you take away Trump's, like, faux straight-shooter appeal, as Bernie would, he's nothing. He's reduced to a loud, pompous asshole who's got nothing to say, who yaps his mouth but nothing comes out. So, but Bernie says, no, here's the policy substance, here's why I'm right, and he comes across as the real straight shooter. So I can't wait, and I hope it happens. Okay. Now, here we go. Now, unfortunately, I'm sorry, man. / not really sorry, but Nate Silver, it's happening again, man. I have a feeling that he might have caught wind of this show, and he hates it. I've tweeted him a few times now when I couldn't hold back my disgust with some of the silly stuff he said. So, who knows? Maybe I'll get a little peek at this one, too. I have to admit that I really hate doing the segment that I'm about to do because I genuinely like Nate Silver and his outlet 538. I mean, for the John McCain versus Obama election, he was spot on. For the Romney versus Obama election, he was spot on. But he's even admitted to this point that this election, he's been butt cheeks. He's just terrible. Like he said, for example, Hillary Clinton has over 99% chance of winning Michigan. She lost Michigan. Over 99%? You're the stats guy, and somehow you missed it. Okay, now to be fair, I thought Bernie was going to lose too, but I thought it was going to be much, much closer. Whereas, obviously, he didn't think it was going to be close at all. That's why Hillary had over a 99% chance of victory. He said Trump is never going to win, and he held on to that for a really long time. At the beginning, I, like everybody else, said Trump's not going to win, but then I changed immediately when I saw further evidence. So I evolved with new evidence, because that's what you do if you're rational. Well, he even admitted recently, we haven't done that. But then he keeps making bad predictions, and he keeps having horrible articles written on his site. And it's honestly, it's really getting worse. It's abysmal at this point. So a new article they have is titled, Bernie Sanders Isn't Doing Well with True Independence. Okay, now again, hold on. You're thinking, well, Bernie's actually crushing with independence. He's winning independence at a better rate than Trump and certainly a better rate than Hillary. Hillary's losing to Trump and Bernie on that front. So how can you say that the guy in the race who is literally doing the best with independence isn't doing well with independence? Well, they snuck in that word true. True independence. Okay, explain yourself. What do you mean? They say, quote, a lot has been made of Bernie Sanders' appeal with the independent voters during the Democratic presidential primary. He has won people who identify as independents in state after state, while Hillary Clinton has won people who identify as Democrats. Some Sanders backers have argued that this will translate to the general election. They point to general election polls that show Sanders doing better against Donald Trump than Clinton is. The problem with this analysis, however, is that most independents are really closeted partisans, and there is no sign that true independents disproportionately like Sanders. Okay, wait, hold on. You just said, he wins independents. So then why is the headline Bernie Sanders isn't doing well with true independence? You admit that he wins independence. But you say, well, okay, here's the thing, though. Most of those independents are closet partisans. And then who cares? He wins independence, though, right? Yes, he does. But they're closet partisans. Who cares? What does that mean? He still wins independence. So why is that relevant? Like, it's fine to bring up that fact if you're still putting the onus on the overarching point, which is, hey, he still wins them. But no, they use it to dismiss it. So they say, oh, they're closet partisans, so it doesn't count. Yeah, but why? Why would it not count? That doesn't make any sense to say that. Well, maybe perhaps it's because Bernie Sanders is the one who is winning on that front. So, let me give you more. Quote, most voters who identify as independent consistently vote for one party or the other in presidential elections. In a Gallup poll taken in early April, 41% of independents leaned Democratic and 36% leaned Republican. Just 23% of independents had no partisan preference. In the last three presidential elections, the Democratic candidate who received the support of no less than 88% of self-identified independents who leaned Democratic, in the last three presidential elections, the Democratic candidate received the support of no less than 88% of self-identified independents who leaned Democratic. These are, in effect, Democratic voters with a different name. Right now, Clinton is struggling with this group. According to a Gallup poll conducted May 15th to May 21st, her favorable rating among Democratic-leaning independents was just 51%, compared with 73% among people who identify as Democrats. That's a 22-point difference. Sanders and Trump, on the other hand, had gaps of just 3 and 7 percentage points. 22-point gap for Clinton, 3 and 7 percentage point gap for Bernie and Trump, between independents who lean toward their party and their party's pure partisans. So, think about that. They're saying, oh, Bernie Sanders does significantly better with these independents who lean Democratic. Yeah, so wouldn't that be a point in his favor? Well, they say no. Quote, Sanders did slightly better with Democratic-leaning independents, 71% favorable, again, compared to 51% for Hillary Clinton, but that appeal does not seem to extend to true independents. In the Gallup poll, Sanders had a 35% favorable rating among independents who don't lean toward either party. Clinton's favorable rating with that group was 34%. Okay, what? They go, oh, the problem with Bernie Sanders is he doesn't get these true independents, which don't lean Democratic and don't lean Republican, the ones who are really in the middle between the two parties. He doesn't do well with them. Oh, really? So what are his numbers with them? He has a 35% favorable rating. Oh, okay, that's pretty bad. What's Hillary's number with them? 34. And the title of the article, yet again, is Bernie Sanders isn't doing well with true independents. Well, hold on. According to your own numbers, you admit Hillary Clinton is doing worse with them. Why wouldn't the title be Hillary Clinton isn't doing well with true independents? And on top of that, she ain't doing well with Democratic-leaning independents. So she ain't doing well with independents. They can't help themselves. Their bias oozes out. Okay, more. One could argue that Sanders has greater potential with these true independents than Clinton. Just 63% of them had formed an opinion of him, according to the Gallup poll, while 83% had done so for Clinton. But it's also possible that these true independents will turn against him in greater numbers as they learn more about him. Whoa, 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 whoa. You just made that up. That's an opinion. I thought you were the stats people. I thought you were the numbers people. You care about data. You're the empirical people. Well, you're right in this article where you admit within the article, hey, if you go by the numbers strictly, Bernie's doing better in all categories, Democratic-leaning independents and true independents. And then here you are saying, well, no, these independents, you're arguing that they're against him when the evidence shows that they're for him, and you're saying, well, maybe they'll turn against him if they learn more about him. There is no reason to believe that. Certainly no data-driven, factual reason to believe that. In fact, the evidence points in the other direction. The more anybody learns about him, the more they like him. Look at his numbers all along the trends. He started out super low because very few people knew who he was. The more people learned who he was, the more his numbers went up in every imaginable way. In terms of how many people would vote for him, in terms of favorability, likability, everything. It's all trended in a positive direction. But their main argument against him is, well, okay, so he's winning among all independents, but I don't know, maybe the more true independents, which is a tiny sliver of independents, learn about him, the more they'll dislike him? Again, you're making stuff up and acting as if it's factual. That's not factual. All right, more. For now, though, Sanders' big advantage over Clinton in general election matchups is his edge among Democratic-leaning independents. Not pure independents, which, again, is a tiny sliver of independents. And he still beats her by 1 point with those people. Currently, all the Democratic groups that like Clinton also like Sanders. But the reverse is not true. Clinton has yet to win over a number of Sanders supporters, but Sanders does very well among most Clinton supporters. That would be an argument in his favor again. But that we're talking about Clinton's need to win over Democratic-leaning independents, they continue, rather than true independents, is a hopeful sign for her campaign. Okay, yet again, you made that part up. They're saying it's okay, relax, because Hillary Clinton doing poor among Democratic-leaning independents is evidence that she's going to do better among Democratic-leaning independents. No, it's evidence of what the fuck it is right now. So what is it right now? She's doing poorly among Democratic-leaning independents. The fact that you think that conceptually, theoretically, philosophically, they might jump on board with her because they're Democratic-leaning and she's a Democrat, again, that is purely made up in your mind. You have no data for that. And in fact, the evidence is the opposite. They're not for her right now because they don't like her. The Democratic-leaning independents are for Bernie because Bernie's actually holding true to Democratic roots, liberal and progressive roots. His positions much more coincide with Democratic-leaning independents. But they say, she's a Democrat, they're Democratic-leaning, therefore, it looks good that they'll jump to her. That's not data. That's not empirical. That's not factual. You're just saying it. And the thing that's so frustrating is, and this is my main beef with 538 nowadays, they do this reading between the lines thing, and they pretend like it's factual. It's not factual. You're giving your opinion. And whenever they do this reading between the lines thing, their opinion is always the least likely opinion. Like, it's like people there know nothing about politics. So, you know, anybody who follows the trends and knows the way that elections usually work and, you know, would understand that all these Democratic-leaning independents, many of them are new voters, many of them are millennials, and they really dislike Hillary Clinton. So this idea that they'll just magically go to her is something that you're making up to try to hoist the argument up that, well, Hillary's just a better general election candidate, and Bernie Sanders has so many problems with true independents. Okay, guys, the title of the article is Bernie Sanders isn't doing well with true independents. In the article, they give you the numbers, and they admit he's doing well with Democratic-leaning independents. He's destroying her on that front by about 20 points, and he's doing better with true, so-called true independents, which is the tiny sliver of independents that say they're actually in between Republicans and Democrats, that they don't lean towards either party up front. So he's winning with both sets of independents, and the title of the article is Bernie Sanders isn't doing well with true independents. And their article makes up, gives the opinion that, well, it's okay, don't worry about it, because the more people learn about Bernie, the less they'll like him. You made that up. That's not true. The evidence is the opposite of that. And they go, well, it's okay, because Democratic-leaning independents will likely go to Hillary. That looks good for her. Again, you made that up. There's no evidence of that. There's no evidence of that. When turnout is high, more millennials go out and more independents go out. And who wins those open primaries? Bernie Sanders does. That you think that in a general they'll all just fall in line behind Hillary is something that you think. And it's not backed up by the data. And even your article admits that the numbers are the opposite of what your title implies. Okay. All right, let me continue here. Talk a little bit about Hillary Clinton's emails. The State Department Inspector General released a report or an audit on Hillary Clinton's time as Secretary of State and her emails, and it does not look good for her. So Huffington Post explains here. The report concluded that Clinton would not have been allowed to use the email server in her home had she asked the department officials in charge of information security. The report said that staff who later raised concerns were told to keep quiet. Several suspected hacking attempts in 2011 were never reported to department information security officials in breach of department rules, it said. Damn. They continue. The Inspector General's office examined email record keeping under five secretaries of state, both Democratic and Republican. John Kerry, the current office holder, and predecessors Madeleine Albright, Colin Powell, and Condoleezza Rice all agreed to speak to the Inspector General's investigators. Clinton was the only one who declined to be interviewed, and as did her aides. The report contradicted Clinton's repeated assertion that her server was allowed and that no permission was needed. Several other inquiries continue, including a U.S. Justice Department investigation into whether the arrangement broke laws. When two lower-level information technology officials tried to raise concerns about Clinton's email arrangement in late 2010, their supervisor in Clinton's office instructed them never to speak of the secretary's personal email system again. Their supervisor told them that department lawyers had approved of the system, but the inspector general's office said it found no evidence that that was true. Wow. So this doesn't look good, and I got to be honest with you guys. My perception from that is it looks like she's hiding something. Now, at the beginning of this email scandal, I didn't think there was anything in this at all because there were so many bullshit right-wing hack so-called scandals that were non-scandals against the Clintons for all these years. It's understandable to just assume this is part of another right-wing bullshit attack. But the more you look into it, the more you learn it's not true. Like, for example, at the very beginning, I thought that the email scandal was simply that she used her personal email when she was supposed to be using her government email. And people were like, oh, well, this is bad for security reasons. And so my response to that was, okay, well, did anybody successfully hack into it? And at the time, the answer was no. So I said, who cares? Get over it. She used the wrong email address, whatever. No, the more you look into it, the more you learn, she actually built a server in her house. Why would you build a server in your house? Like, it's one thing to use a different email, the wrong email, but, like, you went out of your way to build a whole server in your house. I don't get why you do that. It almost looks like, by design, you're trying to skirt any kind of transparency whatsoever, and as Secretary of State, you have to have full transparency. Like, you're doing emails that are going to be part of, they're going to be on record. Well, it turns out she ended up deleting thousands of emails before turning over some stuff for an investigation. And she goes, it's okay, don't worry about it, it's personal. How the fuck do we know? You're Secretary of State. You gotta, like, the stuff you're saying is on record, just like how we have old tapes from the White House, phone calls and whatnot. Like, this is all part of the record. When you're doing official business, like, we put you in there. You're supposed to be a representative of the people. You're Secretary of State. It's not, this isn't a thing where it's just like, oh, I disagree and I don't want to show you my stuff. You're not a private citizen. That's fucking madness. So why would she do this? Guys, she's hiding something. It's that simple. She's hiding something. Now, whether or not those things broke laws, that's a separate question. I don't know the answer to that, and I do know that it would be super hard to prove if indeed it did break laws. But she is hiding something. And I think the most likely thing is it has to do with the Clinton Foundation, and it has to do with, like, literal quid pro quos. So you have the Clinton Foundation. We've seen some stories already, great reporting from the International Business Times, where they would take money. So Bill Clinton would go give a speech, would take money from various governments around the world, and then Hillary would turn around and, oh, look at that, we approved weapons deals for you after you just gave Bill a tremendous amount of money. So there's, like, that's questionable. That's corruption. That's bribery. Here, Mr. Clinton family member, take money, and I'm sure that this will not affect you or your family or your wife, who is Secretary of State, who can approve our arms deal now. So in those emails, it is certainly possible that there was some literal quid pro quos where they just set it up and said it, whether it's with Saudi officials or whoever, where they say, oh, if I give Bill X amount of money for a speaking fee, will you approve the weapons deal? Oh, you will. Thank you. Boom. Done. So if you have emails like that and you can prove that, that's a crime. That's a crime. Because everybody knows the way that legalized bribery and corruption works in America, you got to be coy about it. You got to be clever about it. You can't just say, I am going to give you money and you are going to do me favors. It's got to be quiet. Okay, here, I'm giving you a campaign contribution of X amount. Oh, don't worry. If I want something, I'm not expecting anything in return. And then later on you call them, are you pushing for that policy thing I like with those extra loopholes and subsidies? It's got to be, you got to keep it on the low. You can't just say it. So, and then furthermore, we're talking about foreign governments, which is different, and that's actually another level of illegal. So I don't know if it's in there, but I think it's possible, if not likely, that it's in there. Whether you could prove it in court is a separate issue, and whether there's going to be any consequences is a separate issue. But it appears like what people are saying now is, and the Washington Post, who backs Hillary like crazy, they had an article like, tisk, tisk, We are so angry at you looking at me waving my finger in your face. Let me tell you something right now. You broke these rules, and it is inexcusable. But the entire article, you get rules, 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 rules. They don't say laws. They say rules. That's on purpose. They say rules because they go, well, what are you going to do? She shouldn't have done this, but hey, you only broke rules. There's no laws being broken here. Got to let her go. We're totally against it. Look what she did. It's terrible, but she broke rules, not laws. So they're trying to make it. We got to let her go even though she did something wrong. She's still under FBI investigation, guys. Keep that in mind. And if there's any argument Bernie Sanders is going to make at the convention to try to flip superdelegates, not, I think they're all in Hillary's camp anyway, big time, because they're corrupt. They're Democratic establishment insiders. But the argument he'll make is twofold. I beat Trump by gigantic numbers, 15 points in the most recent poll. She loses to Trump by 2 points. That's a giant difference. I'm the better candidate. And, oh, yeah, she's under FBI investigation. You really want to risk a Trump presidency off of her narcissism and selfishness? She wants so bad to be president that we don't take into account that she's under FBI investigation? Imagine Bernie Sanders was under FBI investigation. What would Hillary supporters say? Drop out immediately! You're under FBI investigation! You could be a criminal! Get out of here! When she does it, nobody even talks about it in the mainstream media. So here we are, man. She did something wrong and she's hiding something. We don't know what it is and we don't know if it can be proven in court and we don't know if there will be consequences. But this adds to the notion that she's untrustworthy. You want to know why? Because she's untrustworthy. All right, I'm gonna push off this first break for a while because I got so much to get to, and I got to squeeze them in since we're not going to be here Friday and Monday. Rebecca Bohannon of Huffington Post wrote an article about sexism in the 2016 election and how all these male Bernie Sanders supporters, white male Bernie Sanders supporters, they're sexist. If you say you're not and you give reasons why you don't support Hillary, well, you just don't get how sexist you are. She actually says in the article at one point, the conscious sexism and subconscious sexism. See the move she did there? So if you say, hey, here are the reasons why I support Bernie Sanders and it has nothing to do with gender, she goes, well, you just don't get subconsciously you're sexist. And you don't even know it. Perhaps you don't even know it, but you're sexist. Okay, so let's break this down. She says, quote, as it becomes more possible that Hillary Clinton could well be our first female president, sexism in the United States is made apparent to me in ways it never was before. The majority of the men in my life, as friends and family, are straight, socially liberal, white males, and all say they are at least pro-women's equality if they are not willing or able to identify themselves as feminists. But every straight white man I know is either supporting Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump. None are supporting Hillary. And therein lies the sexist rub. I know lots of young women who are voting for and vocally supporting Sanders. I don't know any straight white men who are voting for nor vocally supporting Clinton. All right, so number one, they exist. What you're doing here is bringing up something that's an anecdote. Now, sure, the numbers show that it's perhaps not as high as you would like it to be, but they do exist. And the second thing is, what would be evidence to you that these people are not sexist? Because you're just kind of asserting it at this point. So what would prove the opposite to you? Well, I guess, you know, maybe one thing would be if, in fact, they supported Hillary with a majority. If it was Hillary had a majority of white men in the primaries, well, then perhaps she would say that they're not sexist. Except, wait a second, in 2008, Hillary won white men in the primary by double digits. So she won white men overwhelmingly in the primary in 2008. Well, shockingly, she actually acknowledges this. That's weird. It seems to disprove her point. But what does she say? Quote, 8 years ago, white males were more okay with the idea of a white woman as president than a black man. But in 2016, they still prefer both white male contenders, Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, to a potential female president. Oh, so we're racist too. Thanks. I didn't know all these things about myself, but now I do. All other fellow male Bernie supporters, not only are you sexist, but you're racist. This is almost like a parody. Like, this is a caricature. Like, that. So when you give the counter evidence, hey, now, wait a second. Nobody's against her because she's a woman. Certainly no Bernie supporters are against her because she's a woman. And when you say our evidence is in 2008, white men in the primary actually supported her by double digits. She goes, oh, well, that's just because she was running against a black guy. So you're racist, too. Amazing. So she continues. Sanders and Trump supporters have continuously fallen back on the same two talking points when it comes to knocking Clinton, taking money from super PACs and using her family's email server over the State Department server while Secretary of State. While Bernie himself said he's sick of talking about the emails, both Bernie and his supporters will not let the super PACs go. It is an argument that inherently brings up the question of sexism when democratically beloved President Obama has also swung to the side of super PACs but has not been criticized for it. What? Apparently you're not very familiar with secular talk. Apparently you're not very familiar with the Young Turks. Apparently you're not familiar with the David Pakman Show. Apparently you're not familiar with a plethora, a variety of new media outlets where it would disprove exactly what you're saying here. Of course we care that President Obama has a super PAC, and of course we rip him for money in politics. I rip him for that all the time. And by the way, that has come out in certain ways in the sense that President Obama has signed pieces of legislation that repeal certain parts of Dodd-Frank or increase gigantic loopholes for Wall Street. What was it, the Colombia Free Trade Agreement or the Panama Free Trade Agreement? He signed one of these, and that helped people in the financial sector dodge more taxes. Of course we're against him having a super PAC and him taking money. On what planet would people say, I'm only against money in politics when it comes to women, but for men, no problem whatsoever? No, I criticize both genders for partaking in this deeply corrupt system of legalized bribery where they do the bidding of their donors at the expense of their constituents, the American people. You're just making it up. I don't know. Well, yeah, okay, so you hate money in politics when it's Hillary, but when it's men? I just did segments yesterday on how Donald Trump is a fucking liar and he is taking big money, and we should all be angry about that. Never mind all the other Republican candidates. They were taking money too, and there are a lot of establishment Democrats who take money. All of them should take money. TYT is pushing for Wolfpack, an amendment to get money out of politics. There's not a stipulation in there that says, oh yeah, by the way, we just mean for women. No, it is for everybody who's running for political office. See, what you're doing here is you're using hack arguments. These are hack arguments. All right, more. Hillary is a pre-Bernie and pre-Trump politician. Could she be where she is today if she hadn't played by the same rules every man did up until this point in time? No. And if she were suddenly a dark horse, former First Lady springing onto the scene, former First Lady is a dark horse, declaring she was running for president as a no super PAC candidate, would anyone take her seriously or give a shit? Come on, no. Bernie's campaign is a campaign he is able to run because he is a white male. Our first ever white female candidate does not have such privilege. Did you just claim Bernie Sanders not having a super PAC is white male privilege? You just took potentially the single best thing about Bernie Sanders and used it as a strike against him. So he says, I'm not going to be corrupt. I'm not going to be bribed. I'm not going to take money from big corporations. I'm not going to take money from billionaires because I don't want to do their bidding. I want to represent the American people. You've taken that, which is overwhelmingly positive, and you've smeared him with it by saying white male privilege. That is beyond actually see what you're doing is what you just accused the men of doing. You accuse the men of saying, well, if men partake in money in politics and are corrupt, it's fine. That's what you accuse the men of doing. Now, we didn't say that. Male Bernie supporters do not say that. But what did you just do? You just did the opposite of that. You just said, well, when Hillary takes money in politics, I'm fine with it. Projection. This is projection. You are guilty of what you're accusing them of being guilty of. You just made the argument. Come on, would she even be taken seriously if she didn't take super PAC money? She has to take super PAC money. I'm fine with her taking super PAC money. So you're guilty of it. We're against both genders taking super PAC money. We're against money in politics across the board. Whereas you're saying, when Hillary takes it, I'm going to defend it because she's a woman. This is honestly one of the saddest articles I've ever read in my life. And then if you're done telling me why I don't support Hillary Clinton, I can actually tell you why I don't support Hillary Clinton. Now, I know you think you know what's going on in my mind and in the minds of other male Bernie supporters much more than I do, and I know you're just going to dismiss everything I say here as subconscious sexism that I'm somehow unaware of, but I'm just so deeply sexist. But here's why I don't support Hillary Clinton. She voted for the Iraq War. That's not just a little thing to me. I know she says now, oh, I didn't mean to do it. That's not enough for me. The war cost $7 trillion by 2053 when all is said and done. Minimum 200,000 civilians died as a result of that. I don't just forgive that. And especially I don't forgive that when we have another person in the race who did not vote for the war. So it is a policy substance reason why I'm not voting for her. I don't like that she voted for the Iraq War. Is that sexist of me to say? No, it's accurate of me to say. More, I don't like the Patriot Act. She voted for the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act ripped up the Constitution and threw it in the garbage. I mean, you can forget it. You don't have a protection from unreasonable search and seizure anymore. That's gone. That's gone. Privacy rights are gone. NSA stores all of your metadata. She voted for the bill that made that possible. That's why I'm against her. This is a policy substance reason. It has nothing to do with her chromosomes. I'm against her because she supported NAFTA. Bernie Sanders did not. I'm against her because she lobbied for the TPP 45 times. Bernie Sanders did not. Now, she flip-flopped on that, but see, I don't trust her. I don't believe her. Because every time throughout her career, when she's on the wrong side of something and then the opinions change in the country, she goes, oh, no, now I'm with you guys. Well, I don't trust you if you do that. You weren't taking a stand when you should have. And then she supported the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, which repealed Glass-Steagall and made it so commercial banking and investment banking, you remove the firewall, so now commercial banks can do crazy casino capitalist bets that will eventually blow up in their face and tank the world economy. She supported intervention in Syria. She supported intervention and still does. She supports intervention in Libya. She's much more hawkish with Iran. I'm against all of that. So on foreign policy, I don't agree with her at all. Her stance on healthcare and college is too centrist for me. I'm with Bernie in the sense that I want single-payer healthcare. I'm with Bernie in the sense that I want college for all. She's not as progressive on that. I don't agree with her stance on Israel. She's way too one-sided. She agrees with the Likud party in Israel. That's a right-wing party in Israel. That's Netanyahu's party. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with them at all. She flip-flopped on the bankruptcy bill, for example, after she ran for senator and took a lot of money from various industries. And that bill rigged bankruptcy laws in favor of big corporations. So I don't support her for all of these reasons, not because the fact that she's a woman. And again, a very simple point to make about this, which shows you just how wrong you are, ask almost all male Bernie Sanders supporters, hey, would you support Elizabeth Warren for president? They're going to say yeah. My guess is, honestly, over 90% of male Bernie Sanders supporters are going to say, yeah, I would support Elizabeth Warren like that. I'm telling you, I would vote for her immediately. So you don't get to say, oh, you're just sexist, because that doesn't make any sense. And by the way, in the article, she goes on to defend Gloria Steinem and Madeleine Albright, who had some controversy this election cycle because they said things that are honestly preposterous. So Madeleine Albright said there's a special place in hell for women who don't support women. And she defended her for saying that. Well, hold on now. So are you saying you would support Sarah Palin in a race between Sarah Palin and Bernie Sanders? If it was Sarah Palin versus Barack Obama, would you support Sarah Palin? Is there a special place in hell for women who don't support women? Well, there would be a special place in hell for you if you don't support Sarah Palin. She's a woman. Would you support Michelle Bachmann versus Joe Biden, for example, for president? Because if you wouldn't, according to your own logic, there's a special place in hell for women who don't support women. So there's a special place in hell for you. To say I'm only going to vote because of gender is absurd. And then Gloria Steinem said, oh, all these female Bernie supporters, they just basically implied they're trying to get laid. That's all it is. They just want attention from boys. So you are generalizing about all female Bernie supporters and saying they are all acting a certain way because of your vagina, and then you have the nerve to call other people sexist. Wouldn't that be sexist? But she laughs that off. She's like, oh, yeah. You sure, Gloria Steinem and Madeleine Albright are sexist. Well, the comments that they made sure point in that direction, but no. She defends that, and then she goes on to say, yeah, you're sexist either consciously or subconsciously if you're not supporting Hillary, if you're supporting Bernie over Hillary. No, instead of telling us what we think, you could listen to what we think. We'll tell you, and it's not the reason you think it is. I hate to burst your bubble. Okay. By the way, this is what people do when you don't have an argument based on policy substance. When you can't tell me, hey, here's why Hillary Clinton's plan on the economy is better. Hey, here's why her health care plan is better. Here's why her foreign policy is better. What do? You can just smear me. So what do you do, Bernie, bro? You're Bernie, bro. You have an irrational personal animus against Hillary Clinton because she's a woman. You're a sexist, and you're a Bernie, bro. So I'm just going to dismiss everything you say policy-wise because you're Bernie, bro. You are wrong by definition. You're a bad person. So I support her. I'm with her. And go away. Yeah, this is what people do when they have no actual argument. When you can't sit down and have a policy discussion with me and tell me, hey, here's why you're wrong, you could just smear me. And that's exactly what you're doing. All right, now I'm going to go to Glenn Beck here. Glenn Beck has a brilliant theory on the election here that he wants to share with us. He's going to tell us who President Obama supports and why, and he's also going to give us a breakdown of what Hillary Clinton really thinks and where she is on the spectrum and where Bernie is and where he is on the spectrum. Let's watch.
But I don't think that Hillary Clinton is the ideologue, much bigger ideologue than her husband Bill. But she's not the ideologue of Barack Obama. I don't believe she's a Marxist. She may be a socialist, but she's not a Marxist. And I think progressives think there's a difference between the two. Okay?
Yeah.
There is.
She is not somebody who wants to fundamentally transform the United States of America. She's a Marxist, and she's also in it for the graft and everything.
She's had to talk that way during this campaign because she's up against a Marxist.
Right, but I don't think she is a Marxist.
She may not be one.
Okay. And listen to you. She may not be one.
I'm not convinced.
Yeah.
She isn't.
Okay,
she
may not be. She did, you know, she loved Saul Alinsky, so who knows?
Oh, yeah.
But
Saul Alinsky.
I think she's more into the power and to the money for her and her friends. Okay? She's just dirty. She's just dirty. Why is Bernie Sanders still staying in this race?
I'd like to say he believes in America.
And who benefits? There's no
believe
way
in Norway. Yeah.
There's no way for him to win.
Yeah. He might think he can at the convention.
Right. And who benefits if Hillary Clinton is going to jail or it looks like she's going to have real problems? You can't give her the nomination. Who benefits there?
Bernie.
Theory, Bernie could benefit. I think you could make a case, a bad case, but I think you could make a case that he's looking for an ideologue to replace him. He's done all of his work. He's done the work of bringing this country to the brink of Marxism.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not going to have it flushed away by Hillary Clinton.
Now here you have a 74-year-old socialist to maybe finish the job you started.
Finish the job. Put him and Elizabeth Warren on the ticket.
You know what he's saying, right? He's saying that President Obama allowed the release of the Inspector General's report on the State Department and Hillary's email because he wants to tank her campaign because she's not liberal enough. So he's trying to bring her down with the email scandal because he wants Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren to swoop in and finish his grand Marxist plot. I'm not sure I've ever seen a less accurate theory in political history. Okay, first of all, dude, Obama has all but endorsed Hillary Clinton already. I mean, in various interviews, he's kind of, you know, said, we need to continue our legacy and what we do, and just because people take money does not mean they are sellouts by definition, and blah, blah. Like, he's dropped so many hints that he supports Hillary Clinton. So you're just wrong that he doesn't support Hillary. But they think that he doesn't support Hillary because of the release of this report. Obama had no control over that report, the report on Hillary's emails. He doesn't have personal control over that. But in their minds, ooh, the big nefarious government, Obama's pulling all the strings. No, believe me, if they felt like they could, you know, get rid of that report, quash that report, they would do it, but they can't. They can't do it. The head of the FBI is investigating them. The head of the FBI is a Republican. So, or the FBI, I should say, is investigating Hillary, not Obama. In his mind, he really thinks Obama supports Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, and he supports Marxism. I'm always fascinated and amazed by the fact that so many right-wing pundits, they've been doing what they're doing for years now. I mean, O'Reilly's been there for decades now on Fox News. They still don't know basic political and economic definitions, and they don't care to learn it because they're just – all they do is go out there and do propaganda. So if you get things terribly wrong, they don't care, and the people listening in the audience, they don't have political science degrees, so they don't care either. Dude, Marxism, communism, you're talking about state control, central command of everything. In no way do any people on the Democratic side support that. For fuck's sake, Hillary is basically an old-school Republican. She's center-right, pro-establishment, pro-corporate. He's right about one thing, that she's in it for the narcissism and the money, that's for sure. But in terms of where she falls on the spectrum, she's where, like, Richard Nixon is. For fuck's sake, how do you not get this? Bernie Sanders, a Marxist? Bernie Sanders has said repeatedly, I'm not even a socialist. I'm a democratic socialist, which basically, for those who don't know, in political science terminology and definitions, that basically means that he believes in a hybrid system of capitalism and socialism like we already have right now, but he just wants to add certain more things, check off a few more boxes for the socialist side. So, for example, healthcare, college, these are things where he goes, okay, that the government should be more involved. But in no way does he want the government to come in and take over your furniture factory. He's not in any way a Marxist. And Obama, they think Obama's a Marxist. Guys, under President Obama, the private sector has grown by over 12 million jobs. The private sector, that's capitalism. The capitalist sector has grown by 12 million jobs. There's been a net cut of hundreds of thousands of government jobs under Obama. That is the opposite of Marxism. As Bill Maher said, if he's a Marxist, he's the world's worst one. Or even if he's a socialist, he's the world's worst one. Because he is. The stock market doubled in size since he's taken office. The deficit has been cut from $1.4 trillion under Bush to about $500 billion today. All these are things that Republicans say are their goals. These are things they should love. But no, he's a Marxist. He's a Marxist. He prefers Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, even though he hates them because they're way more progressive than he is. And Hillary just isn't left-wing enough for President Obama. I'm not sure I've ever heard a Glenn Beck theory that's been accurate. Okay. All right, let me take a break here. When we come back, the AFP has a fascinating story on the Cuban economy that we're going to talk about, and we're going to talk more about Trump's Christian advisor, and I got a bunch of other stuff too, man. I still got a lot to get to. Got a busy day because we're not going to be here Friday or Monday, so stay right there. We'll be right back.
Niggas round the corner, come and see what we about. Yeah. But we don't know the day, so we don't want them by the house. The skipper started busting when they saw him pulling out. We hit them niggas dirty for fucking up a vibe. And we packed up all that shit and moved it to the other side. And visited a spot, this girl is on my dick. She said, I grabbed up my Glock, is where the fools hang out. I'm only trying to hustle another change route. But they ain't getting nothing if I ain't on beam. I'ma leave them niggas suffering. Loving, fuck with you, getting if I ain't got nothing. my name. I ain't got a rep, cause they know I got change. You can catch me in that pool ball, that money green thing. Get a fish and shrimp pool ball and go sit on St. James. I'm a player like my old boy, that's where I get paid. Old start passing, cause they want me to see them. Ain't giving no action if they want some for them. Keep a soda rack from the AM to the PM. My ear in my lap, looking great up in the PM. I know them niggas watching, cause they know that I'm bugged. But they could catch a hot one for fucking with a thug. Nothing was popping, so we went in the club. All the hoes started talking, cause they knew who we were. Yes, I'm thugging, yes, I'm clubbing. I ain't tripping on your look, bitch, I'm buzzing. Rules and niggas, I'm not loving. Fuck what you getting if I ain't got nothing.
Last 30 minutes or so for a 4-day break for me. Like I said, I got a bachelor party I'm going to. Travel start tomorrow. Show will be back on Tuesday. But a lot of stuff's going to upload while I'm gone, so you won't miss me too much, pumpkin. I really, really, really like this next story. I really like this next story. This story's awesome. The AFP has a fascinating story on the Cuban economy, and we have some good news. They say the Cuban authorities are considering legalizing certain private businesses, a potentially transformative move for the communist island as it liberalizes its economy. The ruling Communist Party on Tuesday published a list of reforms proposed during its Congress in March, including possible changes to laws governing small and medium-sized businesses. Potential reforms include allowing Cubans to create small businesses mainly run by the worker and their family, medium-sized, small, and micro-scale private businesses. Parliament must debate and approve the proposal before it can become law in the one-party state, but the very mention of the possibility in an official party document signals change in Cuba, which is opening its relations with former enemies such as the United States. Two words for this. Thanks, Obama. No, I actually mean it in this case. So I'm tough on Obama in many ways, and he deserves it in many ways, whether it's the drone war, whether it's at the NSA. There's a lot of areas where he deserves the criticism. There's some things where I just give him nothing but praise. I agree with the executive order on immigration. I agree with the Iran deal. I agree with the Cuba move. And it worked. It worked. So we had the embargo on them for decades. And in no way did you affect the kind of change that people would like to see. Well, now we're having the kind of change that the Republicans would even want, and they've wanted for years, and we got it through diplomacy, and we got it through opening up lines of communication and talking things out. Do they still do things that are fucked up? Of course. When it comes to social issues, they crack down big time. Freedom of the press is not a thing. And all those things need to be taken care of with time. But here's what we know doesn't work. We're going to give you the cold shoulder and not talk to you and not trade with you and not have conversations and try to work it out. And if we do anything, it'll just be bombing you. No, it turns out that that's stupid. That's idiotic. It has the opposite of the effect you want. In fact, you just give the Castros more power when you do that. But what doesn't do that? The opposite, what Obama did. You open up the lines of communication. It's give and take a little bit. And then would you look at that? Now, all of a sudden, soon after we open up the line of communications, all of a sudden, a bill is proposed. Hey, how about we don't have state control of absolutely, positively everything? Let's allow some very small businesses, some micro businesses, as I call them, family-owned enterprise, and let's not have the government at the helm of all private enterprise. Well, everybody should support that. Now, by the way, I think there are actually going to be some people on the left who don't like this because they view this as the first step in a long road to just having full corporatization of Cuba, and we're right back to where we were in the 1950s when it was a dictatorial regime and it was basically America's puppet state. No, guys, I think the answer is somewhere in between, man. Like, they should have full independence, obviously. But should they also have certain things that are private industry in Cuba and certain things that can remain in the hands of the state? Of course. Every modern nation has that. You know, I always point to Scandinavia. When you have healthcare and college being government-run, that's great. That's what you want. And those perform better than ours when we have less government in those areas. But, yeah, you should still have certain things that are not government-run at all, you know, whether it's building TVs or electronics or furniture or houses, whatever. There's a bunch of stuff that shouldn't be government. It should be private. Well, we wanted to move Cuba in that direction for a while, and now we're actually doing it because of communication, because of diplomacy. It actually fucking worked. So, and look, there is a line somewhere. They're going to have to figure out where that line is, right? So right now, I would still argue that they're too heavy on the side of communism, which is state control of everything. But we're moving in the direction of a little more capitalism here. But, you know, if I was emperor for a day, what I think would be a better mix for Cuba, again, I know I always bring up Scandinavia, and I think it's a better mix for us, too, is to be more like Scandinavia. So you can still have your healthcare system, education system, and probably even other stuff they're going to have that's public. But yeah, you should open up to more private industry. There should be more private industry. That's a positive thing. That's a step in the right direction. And it was only achievable through further conversation, further trade, give and take. It is not achievable through scolding them, giving them the cold shoulder, doing an embargo, doing sanctions, bombing them as we did back in the day. That ain't going to change anything. That's just going to make the communist regime stronger. That's going to make the Castro stronger. When you open up the lines of communication and you actually trade, they go, oh, these guys are right about some things, and then they start to make the economy slightly more capitalist. So it's wins all around, man. I support this, and we can thank the Obama administration for doing this. And Republicans, put very simply, tell me how my ass tastes. Okay. Now we got a Christian goofball here that we'll have some fun with. The other day, we discussed Trump's top Christian advisor, a guy by the name of Frank Amedia, and he's crazy. So he threatened to withhold charity from Haitians after the earthquake if they participated in voodoo. He went there, and he's like, oh, let me help everybody because I'm a good Christian. Oh, you guys are doing voodoo? Maybe I shouldn't help you because of the fact that you do voodoo, and I think that's evil. So now we have some more info about him. Here he is on another Christian TV show. Let's see what he has to say.
The most amazing encounter I had recently was on March 11, 2011. Many will recall that was the day there was the terrible tsunami in Japan. Thousands of people killed instantly. It came suddenly. Nobody could prepare for it. I was being very holy. I was sleeping. It was 6:55 a.m. in the morning, snoring. My wife stormed into the room, and she said, Frank, our daughter is on an island in Kauai, Hawaii, and the tsunami is going to crash into where she is in 5 minutes. Apostle, I had no time to prepare. I had no time to put on worship music. I had no time to pray. I stood at the edge of my bed, and I said, in the name of Jesus, I declare that tsunami to stop now. And I specifically said, I declare those waters to recede. And I said, Father, that is my child. I am your child. I'm coming to you now and asking you to preserve her. Apostle, it was seen by 400 people on a cliff. It was on YouTube. It was actually on the news that that tsunami stopped 200 feet off of shore. Even after having sucked the waters in, it churned and it went on and did devastation in the next island. I saw it in the Spirit of God while it was happening. My daughter called me on the phone. I was describing to her what I was seeing, and she said, Daddy, I'm watching that right now. I had an encounter with the living God that was able to salvage my daughter.
Yeah. Cuckoo. I don't understand how people in any political party can just, like, casually have these absolute morons as advisors. Like, I get it. Oh, and he even admits, I'm trying to reach out to Hispanics, and namely Christians who are Hispanic. And apparently this guy's Hispanic. Who knew? And he's like, okay, now go out there and try to get me votes. Dude, this guy's a moron. This guy's crazy. He's a con artist. But then again, so is Donald Trump, so it works. But he's claiming that he has the ability to stop tsunamis. Preposterous. And why the fuck would you be happy about it and be talking about it? I get, oh, your daughter was saved. But you just said it went on to do devastation in the next island. So somebody else's daughter was killed. That's not evidence of a loving God. That is not evidence of a loving God. The Almighty decided to do a tsunami, but he was kind enough to spare my child, but somebody else's child, and many other people's childs, dead. What a loving God. What a great God. No, that God would be a prick. It's like, okay, I got a machete. I'm going to kill one of you. Which one should I pick? If I pick the other guy, will you love me? Yeah, I'll call you a loving God if you do that. That ain't a loving God, bitch. And then also, Mother Jones adds to this here, because stopping tsunamis perhaps isn't even the craziest of the things that he said. Quote, in an undated Isaac TV broadcast, Amedia engages in faith healing, trying to assist people with jaw problems, bleeding teeth and gums, ringing in their ears, tongue cancer, and parched lips. He does the Pat Robertson trick, too, where he goes, oh, it worked. It worked. There's no evidence of anything, of it working for anybody, obviously. He's just a guy pretending to faith heal. But he does the thing like Pat Robertson, holds people's hands, his co-host on TV. Lord, Lord, let's heal somebody. Somebody out there got a bum knee and it hurts. And now I'm going to let you know we're going to heal it. And meanwhile, some old guy popped a Percocet 30 minutes ago. It finally starts working, time's up with Robertson. He's like, Pat Robertson done healed my knee. No, but see, this actually is dangerous because there are plenty of people who are really, you know, convinced enough and brainwashed enough where if they call into your show and you're trying to heal them of cancer through TV and you claim you did, they're going to go, I don't have to go to the doctor. I'm healed now. Not only is it stupid, not only is it moronic, it's also immoral. And you also could really be doing damage to people on this planet. So, naturally, Trump campaign was a perfect fit for him. Okay. All right, now let's go to some voter suppression stuff that was in the news yesterday. A Wisconsin county clerk basically came out and admitted in testimony in federal court this week that Republicans in Wisconsin are trying to suppress the vote. So Raw Story explains, in a hearing on Tuesday, Republican County Clerk Kathleen Novak spoke in favor of voting restrictions signed into law by Governor Scott Walker between 2011 and 2015, which opponents argue suppress the votes of non-whites. She said, if there's an office open 30 days versus an office that's only open 10 work days, there are obviously voters that have a lot more access than someone else. There has to come a point where it's just giving over access to particular parts of the state. When she was asked if some voters had too much access, Novak replied that there was, quote, too much access to the voters in urban areas as far as opportunities. And then when she was asked about long lines in those areas, she said, apparently access is an easy thing or they wouldn't have long lines. Wait, what? That would appear to be the opposite of true. Well, yeah, I know there's long lines in all these urban areas, but that proves that there's a hell of a lot of access. That's why there are long lines. No, see, that would be something that suppresses the vote. If people have to wait online for an extended period of time, maybe they have to go pick up their kid from somewhere, maybe they got to go back to work, maybe they got to go take care of their mother who's sick, who knows? But if you have these long lines, that suppresses the vote. So, like, no, that's evidence that it's working and that there's a lot of access. Now, again, they go on to say, well, there's a little bit, in some places there's, more time for people to vote. Yeah, but why shouldn't we have that everywhere? So they make it seem like, well, yeah, this place has more, this place has less, but it's fair. No, but that would be the opposite of fair. You need equal time everywhere. And if there are places where there's still long lines, perhaps you'd extend the voting hours or the number of days you can vote for even more people. We've seen this so much this election, man, and it's maddening. There are Republicans who are in control in a bunch of different places. We've seen polling places in some areas cut by 70%. 70% from 2012. Why the fuck would you do that? And we've had some record turnouts in these this primary season. So this is definitely something that has the net effect of suppressing the vote. Now, in the Democratic primary, that ended up favoring Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders because the more people vote, the more it is likely that Bernie Sanders wins. But in a general election, it would just always favor the Republican over the Democrat. And that's, by the way, why Republicans love doing this kind of stuff. Because they know that when turnout is low, they end up winning. When turnout is high, Democrats end up winning. So what do? Come up with tricky ways to suppress the vote. And then when people call you out on it, go, well, what do you mean? The long lines are evidence that we have great access. It's really preposterous, and it's terrible whenever it happens. It's terrible when it's suppressed on the Democratic side, and we've seen the DNC do some of that stuff. And it's terrible when it's suppressed on the Republican side, and they do that all around the country. Because, again, they're much more likely to win when turnout is low, so you try to get into minority areas and come up with tricky ways to suppress the vote. And one of the newest ways is voter ID. There was a story recently, some old black woman who had like five different forms of ID was still turned away. Because they're trying to make it hard, they're trying to suppress the vote, they're trying to make it so those people can't vote and Republicans can win, because honestly, the easiest way for them to win is to rig the election. Okay, now, if you can't tell, I'm kind of trying to breeze through these stories here because I need to get a whole bunch of stuff up for when I'm away. Go to Saudi Arabia. Those geniuses have some stuff for us. My stomach is growling. I love this. I haven't eaten yet, so I'm on air, and in the background you hear like, my stomach's like, give me food. In due time. The goofballs in Saudi Arabia are at it again. Their religious authorities thought it would be a brilliant and necessary move to ban cat pictures. Cat pictures. So Newsweek reports, on a televised broadcast, Sheikh Saleh bin Fawzan al-Fazwan, awesome name, a member of the Saudi Council of Senior Scholars, was told about a new trend of taking pictures with cats that's been spreading among people who want to be like Westerners. And here's his response. What? What do you mean pictures with cats? Taking pictures is prohibited. The cats don't matter here. Taking pictures is prohibited, if not for a necessity. What? Not with cats, not with dogs, not with wolves, not with anything. Okay, that is hilarious. And other things that are banned there, these are stories that we've done in the past too. Chess. And I love their reasoning. They go on to say because it's, quote, a waste of time. And Pokemon. Pokemon is banned in Saudi Arabia because God forbid that fictional voodoo overrides the fictional voodoo of Salafi Islam. You know, they can't have that. They got to have their nonsense pumped into your brain nonstop, and you have to stop the fictional nonsense, which admits it's nonsense, from getting in there. Because, you know, Pikachu might actually end up being more more persuasive than Muhammad. So, yeah, ban that too. This is, like, this is what happens when you have an authoritarian government. This is what happens when you have a theocratic government. You have a bunch of old idiots running the country and looking down on the peasants and just decreeing shit. I do not like cat pictures, therefore, it is banned. Who gives a flying fuck what you like or don't like? You're going to run a country based on your opinion, your personal preferences? No, but see, that's why freedom is superior. I mean, there are so many kinds of activities that I could think of that I hate, that I don't like, that I have no interest in. I'm not going to fucking ban them for other people. That would be ridiculous. That would be the height of selfishness and arrogance. But these guys are like, yeah, I am the height of selfish and arrogant. I don't like this. They literally said for Chess, it is a waste of time. It's a waste of time for you, maybe, because you don't like it. There are plenty of people who do like it. So why would you try to stop them? Because you want to have this iron grip on power. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Say it again. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. You give a bunch of old fundamentalist religious idiots control of a country, and it turns out they act like old fundamentalist religious idiots. I don't like that thing. Ban it. You want to be like Westerners with cat pictures? I'm going to ban it. And by the way, again, I think you're only helping the West when you do stuff like this. Because now everybody in Saudi Arabia, and there are plenty who just wanted to take a cat picture and live their goddamn life because they think their cat is cute and they want to post some pictures online. Now they fucking hate you even more than they did before, and they probably hated you before too. They're going, fuck off, man. I'm just trying to live my life here. Now you're going to ban everything I do? First I was a chess player. You took that away from me. Then I got Pokemon for my kid. You banned that. Now I can't even take a fucking cat picture. And the most amazing thing is, they think they're nailing it. Like, you talk to the religious authorities, they're like, oh, yeah. Everybody loves us. And we are speaking for God. The almighty God hates Charmander, too. Speaking for God, you're not nailing it. The rest of the world looks at you and laughs. They laugh in between feeling horrible for the population you're oppressing. But they laugh at you, and they should laugh at you. So while they have this honestly supremacist feeling about them, we have the right religion, we have the right country, we're in control, we're great, everybody else looks at you like the fucking profound idiots and jokes that you are. Okay. Sarah Burris of Raw Story is reporting on a heartbreaking story about a transgender activist in Pakistan. Quote, Sunday night, Alicia, a 23-year-old transgender district coordinator for Transaction in northern Pakistan, was attacked and shot 8 times, according to a Facebook post from the organization. Her friends rushed her to the hospital, but doctors wouldn't treat her, and she died Wednesday morning. The hospital told them that no bed was available for her. Transaction posted that the gang that shot Alicia is known for targeting members of the transgender community. The Washington Post reports that they have sexually assaulted transgender people and recorded the crime on video. This was the third time that Alicia had been shot. So when they went to the hospital, they said, look, you know, we're in Pakistan. We didn't know. Do we put her in the men's wing or the women's wing? We don't know. So they showed up and they asked. And then the doctors, instead of doing their fucking jobs, some of them went on to harass these transgender women. And some of them told them to dance. Their fucking friend is sitting there shot. They're like, what do? We need your help. Like, oh, you want to do a little dance for me? Go ahead, do a little dance. What the fuck, man? So, look. I mean, transgender people, they have it rough even in the U.S. Like, if you look at, honestly, the hate crime statistics against even the gay community versus the trans community now. People in the gay community even say, Dan Savage recently said it. He's like, actually, trans people have it way worse than we do. So in the West, there's this, you know, anti-trans feeling. Recently, we've, you know, covered the bathroom law, for example. There's this anti-trans backlash now. Can you imagine what the fuck it's like in Pakistan? A way more ultra-conservative religious society and a tribal society in many respects. So you have these poor women, these activists, and, like, they're not even viewed as human. It's like, oh, so you were shot because you're doing work that idiots and far-right-wing religious lunatics disagree with? We don't have a bed for you. How about that? And while you're here, dance for me. Like, okay, here's what we all need to understand. We often talk, oh, okay, so we got gay marriage. There's been progression on this front in the United States and in some places in the West. And we cheer that on. But understand there's so much work that has to be done for the LGBT community still. Not just in the U.S., because there's over 20 states that are allowed, where businesses are allowed to just fire you for being gay. But also the work around the world is honestly even more mind-numbing and scary, because there's still multiple countries where they can kill you for being gay. There's still countries where it's just illegal to be gay. So it gets the death penalty in some places. In other places, it gets you a jail sentence. Like, we're nowhere near the right spot. We've not come anywhere near the finish line. Like, we're not even at a place yet where, in many countries around the world, like, there's just no gay marriage. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's, oh, we need to fight for the right for gay marriage. No, in some places we need to fight for the right for gay people not to get locked up. And in some places not to be killed. In many Muslim countries, you can be put to death for that. When it comes to atheism, too, not to bring that in, but there are places where you can be put to death for being an atheist. That's fucking crazy. So we still have so much work to do. And this is why, like, when liberals get complacent, you're making a mistake. Because a lot of these ideas to you, like, oh, don't be a dick to trans people. A lot of those ideas to you are just duh. Like, obviously. Okay, so they're not exactly like me. Whoop-de-doo. Who cares? Treat them with respect. But in other places around the world, they're not even at the point where it's just a hatred and a dislike for them. They're still at the point where it's like hatred, dislike, and I'm going to murder you. So we got a lot of work to do, and this is further evidence of it right here. And, man, you want to talk about people who have extreme courage. Look at transgender activists in fucking Pakistan. Okay. All right, let's see how much more we can get in here. We only have about 7 minutes left. Eugene Monroe is an offensive tackle for the Baltimore Ravens, and he wrote an article essentially blowing the whistle on the NFL for their failure on the issue of medical marijuana. So he says, before kickoff on game day, in NFL locker rooms all over the country, players wait in line to drop their pants. We call it the T-train. I play for the Baltimore Ravens, and if we're at home, there's a small office sectioned off from the training room in M&T Bank Stadium that we use. If we're on the road, the visiting locker rooms don't usually have sufficient space, so we just go to a corner of the training room. The T-train is nothing more than a bunch of really large guys waiting to pull their pants down to get shot in the butt with Toradol, a powerful painkiller that will help them make it through the game and its aftermath. So he goes on to explain how he's gotten injured in games, and he literally didn't feel it because of this stuff. He tore his shoulder one time, and he just kept playing, and the next day he's like, oh, shit, this hurts, or 2 days later when this stuff wore off. He's gotten a concussion before, and he needed people to look at him and make the determination because he was just rattled and he's ready to keep going because of this shit. So it's a super, super powerful painkiller. It's actually not an opiate, but it is a powerful anti-inflammatory and a painkiller. And he says that it's just super commonplace to use it. Obviously, the even bigger problem, one could argue, is the opiate issue that they're dealing with in the NFL, because so many of the players have to take them in order to dull the pain, in order to get out there to play the next week. So you set up this system where it's, you know, going from painkiller to painkiller to painkiller just to keep yourself together in order to keep playing. That's rough, man. that's rough. And obviously, opiates do have an addictive quality about them. And some people do get addicted, and then you can have big issues as a result of that. So he goes on to call on the NFL to, quote, remove marijuana from the banned substances list, fund medical marijuana research, especially as it relates to CTE, and stop overprescribing addictive and harmful opioids. And there's already evidence that marijuana is neuroprotective, so that's good for all the brain trauma that these guys get. And also it's for many people, just as effective as opiates when it comes to pain relief. So you have this drug which is not nearly as addictive. The opiates, of course, are physically addictive. If marijuana is addictive at all, it's psychologically addictive, which is less serious. So you have this drug that's really effectively not addictive, and it's neuroprotective, and it offers the same pain relief, and there aren't as many downsides. He's like, it's crazy that we're not – why would we not – allow this? And people have gotten suspensions, they've lost careers and whatnot over oh, you smoke marijuana, you failed a drug test. Hey, by the way, right after you failed the drug test, you need some opiates to heal yourself for the next game? We have this crazy double standard baked into the system. Guys, don't get me wrong. If somebody prefers the opiates and they're a football player and they need them to keep going, I'm not going to stop them from taking it. But why would you stop the person from using marijuana if that's what helps them? And the double standard is crazy, and honestly, in most cases, it's a less dangerous drug too than the opiate, so what are we doing here? And that's the point that he ends up making. What are we doing here? We got to change it, we got to fix it, and we got to stop with this just say no, zero tolerance attitude, because it's honestly not based on the facts. Story of the week, and then remember, we're back on Tuesday, so got to go to a bachelor party, not here tomorrow, not here Monday. Okay. So I'm sure you guys remember Cliven Bundy. He's the right-wing moocher who refused to pay his taxes and his grazing fees at his ranch to stick it to the man. Well, now he's on trial for the armed standoff that wound up happening at his ranch with federal authorities. So how's that going? Well, let's see. Gawker reports here. Oregon Public Broadcasting has obtained an email from Cliven Bundy's lawyer to a Utah state representative with known ties to the Koch brothers asking whether the notorious libertarian billionaires would be willing to fund the Bundys' legal fees. He said, I cannot represent Cliven for free. I'm not independently wealthy. I understand from news articles that the Koch brothers are helping to fund Cliven's efforts to return our lands to the states. I would like to speak with someone about helping to fund the legal fees associated with this case. So, here's why this story is absolutely adorable. The guys who portray themselves as the most anti-establishment in the country, Cliven Bundy and his anti-government crowd. All right, we against the establishment and the powerful. They're apparently only against the establishment if that doesn't include billionaires. They're like, oh, can we get some help from the billionaires to fund our legal fees? Let's get on it. We're so anti-establishment that we love the billionaire Koch brothers, who are the most establishment people on the planet. Which leads to the main conclusion about the far-right factions of the Tea Party. It's a fraud, man. It's a fraud. They're not principled. Many people, I think it was Cliven's son, the dude, as he rails against government, he was taking hundreds of thousands of dollars from the government for his small business. They're all hypocrites. They don't give a shit. This isn't really about principle. It's basically, how can I get mine? Oh, I'm in some trouble, and now the almighty billionaire can save me? Now I love the establishment, and I love billionaires. All right, out of time, guys. Much love. See you Tuesday. Mwah. Peace.